I don't wanna be the boy that runs in the back. I don't wanna be the kid that falls in the dark. All I really want to be is the guy that gets that girl.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. We discuss politics, sex, money, and everything in between. And now, here's your host, an immigrant, a self-made millionaire, an American, AJ Steele. Everything I say and do, I'm
just not good. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another incredible episode of the AJ Steele Show. We all have opinions about everything. We have opinions about movie stars, we have opinions about wars and politics, and we have opinions about our presidents. A lot of those opinions are based on what the media told us to think, and some of them are based on our gut feeling. It's that primal sixth sense that tells us if we should trust or mistrust someone after we see them and hear them talk. And I believe we should really listen to that inner voice of ours, because many times that voice is completely unencumbered by anything else. And in most cases, that inner voice ends up being correct. Having said that, I always had a strong feeling about each and every one of our presidents. Some of them I liked on a personal level, but I didn't like their politics. Some I hated, and I hated their politics. And some of them I just tolerated. Now, I acknowledge that a lot of what I thought about those presidents was shaped by the media, because I never got to meet any of them in person, unless if you count the time when my son and I drove 4 hours to see Donald Trump's rally in front of 25,000 people, or in high school when I cut a class and I went to see Mike Dukakis. I actually went to see a Mike Dukakis rally in San Francisco. But then again, he lost the election to George Bush, the daddy George Bush, so I guess that doesn't count. But can you imagine my great surprise and intrigue when I was contacted by a man who told me he personally worked for four presidents and that he was privy to many of their inner secrets and got to see him in action, not to mention the fact that he had a copy of Hunter's laptop from hell. Let me repeat myself. He has a copy of Hunter Biden's laptop from hell. Well, you probably want to know how all of this came about, right? So, the AJ Steele Show has a great Twitter account. It's not the biggest, it's not the largest, it's not the most famous, but we get a lot of attention and we get a lot of action. And we probably have the smartest, most distinguished followers in the world. We have doctors, we have scientists, we have contractors, we have plumbers, electricians, we have famous politicians, moms, dads, grandparents, religious leaders, celebrities, authors, civil rights leaders, and even a few billionaires. And apparently some of those followers are White House insiders. Yes, you heard me right. White House insiders. Now, about a year ago, way before the Ukraine-Russia war started, I tweeted about a lunch I had with a friend who happens to be a billionaire and who does a lot of business with Ukrainian and Russian oligarchs. And he told me a lot of things about all of them. But the main crux of what he said was that Putin and Ukraine were both paying Joe Biden and his family under the table. He also told me that Putin owns a lot of the energy business in Ukraine, and that realistically, the oligarchs from both nations were in bed together and with Biden and his cronies that were taking a cut from their profits, not to mention that they were stealing a lot of the aid that we, the American taxpayers, were sending Ukraine. A few months ago, I also did a very popular show about the Ukraine war where I explained that there's no good guys in either Russia or Ukraine and that we should stay the heck out of there because the whole thing is a battle for gas and oil between the Western billionaire globalists and the Eastern billionaire oligarchs. So a few days later, I got a really cryptic tweet from a man named Mike McCormick, who told me that he worked for many presidents and that he had some incredible information on Joe Biden's dirty business in the Ukraine, and that he can't wait to share it with the AJ Steele Show. So what was my reaction? It obviously really piqued my interest, but I was also very worried because I get hundreds of requests from people who just want to come on our show, and they all tell me they have secret information. The last thing I ever want to do is give my audience fake news. Now, you might not agree with my opinions, but I will never lie to you. So I had my crew check out Mr. McCormick, And lo and behold, he is legit. He actually worked in the White House, and he was really privy to all of those meetings. And he really flew on Air Force One and Air Force Two when President Biden, or back then he was Vice President Biden, flew to the Ukraine. This was exciting news. And I set up the interview with Mike, who happens to be a wonderful guy. He's a really great guy, and he's a great storyteller. And believe me, this interview did not disappoint. The things that you're going to hear are things you have never heard before. They're very eye-opening, and they're fascinating at the same time. He told me some things about presidents that I never knew were true, things about their personal lives. But he also told me things about Joe Biden that many of you don't know, things that Mr. McCormick was privy to, meetings with Putin, humiliations, and the laptop from hell. So I hope you stick around and listen to our interview. And I really hope that you subscribe to our show and spread the word about us to your family and friends and to all of your online friends. We're a top-rated program that's completely self-financed, and it costs you nothing to listen to us and subscribe to us. But it does help with our ratings and our rankings. So I would really appreciate if you would take a few seconds out of your life and sign up to our show. We are on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all the other major providers. And it would be a great honor for me if you subscribed. Last but not least, when I told Mrs. Steele about the explosive information in the interview you're about to hear, she got a little bit worried, and she told me I should probably buy a few more guns to protect myself. But being that I'm a man and I'm a guy, I told her, I'm not worried about anything. Telling the truth will protect me from all evil. But later on, I actually went and cleaned and lubricated all of my weapons. What do they say? Better safe than sorry. This is the AJ Steele Show, and we will be right back.
All I really want to be is the guy that gets the girl.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is.
You finally see your love belongs to me.
Mike, welcome to the AJ Steele Show.
Thanks, AJ. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I've been really looking forward to having you on the show because in many ways you've been privy to some of our nation's most significant historical events of the past 16 years. You practically had a ringside seat in the White House. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you did during your White House years.
Well, thanks, AJ. Yes, for 15 years, I was a White House stenographer with the press office. I started there in 2002. I worked there through 2007. I took a couple years off and did another job in Richmond for a couple years and then went back in 2010 and then finished up with 1 year with Donald Trump, President Trump. So when I first started there, I was a contractor. And my job was as a stenographer to the press office was basically we would walk around in the White House. And back then we used cassette recorders and we had our pagers. You know, it wasn't about cell phones, it was pagers and cassette recorders. So it was a different era altogether. And then we moved into the modern era where now everything is audio immediacy. There's Twitter came out during that time. And for what I did was I was part of the press office. Anytime the president or the vice president would have an interaction with the press, press secretary at his briefing every day or her briefing every day, the president in an interview with, you know, Sports Illustrated or with, you know, the Wall Street Journal, we would have somebody from our offices or team of us in there with a recorder recording it. Then we would bring it back to our office. The team would type it up and we would make it an immediate transcript available to the press office. So they knew what was exactly said in case something was misquoted or something like that.
Got it. So which presidents did you work with?
Well, I worked with George W. Bush. I worked with Barack Obama and I worked with Donald Trump. my position within there was to work with the vice presidents. So even though I did a lot of work with the presidents, and I flew on Air Force One because part of our job to be with the press was if the president was on Air Force One and his press, he went back and talked to the press, there had to be a transcript of it. So we flew on Air Force One with all the presidents, but I also spent a lot of time flying on Air Force Two with Vice President Cheney and Vice President Biden. I never traveled with Vice President Pence.
So I'm assuming you had to pass just a tiny bit of security clearance to get that job, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I passed security clearance several times and worked hard. Joe Biden was definitely a big challenge for our office. And, you know, back then he was a long-winded guy, but our focus had to be the president. And, you know, Joe Biden back in those days wanted to focus on him more than on the president. I mean, he's a pretty big egotistical guy. And so there was always this sort of behind-the-scenes tension in the Obama White House with, you know, how to satisfy Joe Biden's aggressive desire to be kind of the center stage. And I think it caused a lot of behind-the-scenes animosity. I mean, when I first started there, they kind of looked at him as sort of the old man that talked too much. And when I say they, I mean like the senior advisors, David Plouffe's and David Axelrod's looked at him like that. So, you know, I got to know him and see him in that way and worked with him. I traveled with him to Moscow. I traveled with him to Ukraine, to China, a lot of places.
Wow, it sounds like you have so much insider information, and I bet that our audience can't even wait to hear all the juicy tidbits and all of Biden's schemes. But before we zero in on him, I wanted to talk some shop. I know you've been on a lot of shows. You've been on Newsmax, you've been on Fox News, you've been on the Steve Bannon Show, but we're not any of them. We're the AJ Steele Show, and we actually want to hear some dirt about the presidents you work with. So you work with three of them, and my first question for you is, which one of them was nicest on a personal level, and which one was the most, how do I say it, arrogant or the least friendly?
Donald Trump was the nicest on a personal level, without a doubt. I think he was probably one of the most genuine White House occupants in a long, long time. He was a guy who would basically go in a room and be himself in the room. It's not always, you know, the polished guy that the other presidents were. And, you know, he had a fearlessness about him to just be himself. Whereas what I noticed with presidents is there is, I noticed this with President Bush. Mrs. Bush, Laura Bush, never called him George. I only heard him call him George once. She always called him the president as though he wasn't really a person, he was the office. And Obama was a little different. He was a little more sort of casual and cool. And after like kind of the stiffness of the George Bush era with Bush and Cheney, the Obama cool was what everybody was really excited about. But behind the scenes, he was aloof and he wasn't really there for, you know, he cared more about his golf game, to be honest with you. And he cared about a lot of stuff that people thought he was saying he cared about, but he didn't really. So when Trump came in, and I get a quick story for you about Trump. This wasn't me specifically in the room. We had a stenographer who was in the room early in the Trump years. And remember, when he moved in there, Barron Trump was a young kid. He was like 10 or 11. So this guy was in an interview in the Oval Office. It was in the summertime. And all of a sudden, and you know, a presidential interview is a really big deal. They don't get interrupted. It's a very high stress. Focus in, get it done. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the interview, Barron Trump walks in with his tennis coach. He's like, hey, Dad, I want to meet you. I want you to meet my tennis coach. And the interviewer sort of looks up, and the stenographer's there, and the other people in the room are there. And it's the Oval Office. And the tennis coach, they're all sweaty. They just were doing a tennis lesson. And the tennis coach is like, oh, my God, I'm in the Oval Office. I can't believe I would have worn better clothes if I'd come here. And, you know, and the president is just like, hey, Barron, how's it going? Hey. And he meets the coach, and they're saying hi. And Barron goes, there's always a valet in the Oval Office. And the valet goes, Barron, you want anything? And he goes, yeah, I want a Coke or a soda or something. So he gets a soda. So they're having a chit chat with the coach and everybody in the room. So President Trump goes, I'm in the middle of this interview. You guys got to get going. And Barron's like, no, Dad, I got my soda coming. So like, okay, sure, why not? So they chat some more. There's just good natured chatting. Eventually it gets to the point where the interview's over. And they just, that was it. You know, Barron walked in and he just sort of let his son's day be part of his day in the White House. That's very unusual. And that's who Donald Trump is.
That's a great story. Now, I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him myself, but my personal impression of him is of a guy who is not necessarily well-read and that he's not very good with minutiae and details, but he has this incredible street instinct and he understands the big picture better than anyone. He's to me, it seems like he's a natural communicator, but not a politician in the ugly sense of the word. I think he likes to be the center of attention, and in many ways, he reminds me of minorities, some minorities, and I'll tell you why, because to me, it seems like he has a chip on his shoulder, and that chip kind of drives him to greatness and maybe to madness as well. But I also feel that as a human being, he's an extremely sensitive man, the kind of guy who doesn't like to get hurt. He's very careful. He'll do whatever it takes to succeed and appear tough. But on a personal level, he's much more caring and decent than anybody realizes. Can you tell us any more stories about Donald Trump?
I wrote a book about my first years at the White House. And to be honest with you, it didn't end well. You know, the adoration of Barack Obama was over the top, both in the press and in people I worked for. And I made the mistake of declaring openly as the 2016 election was approaching, while I was working in Barack Obama's White House, I would love it if Donald Trump became president. I thought the things he was saying, and I'd listen to presidents for going back to 2002, they were starting to make a lot of sense. His policy ideas made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I think he was really telling people what needed to be said, policy-wise. And there was all this criticism of his personality and his background and his morals and all these things, but I didn't listen to that. Well, I got in a lot of trouble. And even though he won, the people in my office, there was a change in the management. And they said, look, you know, you're not a guy we're going to trust anymore. I couldn't believe it. So I left after a year and I wrote a book about it called 15 Years of Deplorable, a White House memoir. And in that, I have one observation about Trump that I would pass on. I was in the Roosevelt room and there was just sort of a bunch of people in there. It was the press pushing in there. And there was a lot of, sort of negotiation. And at that time, General Kelly was I don't believe he was the chief of staff yet, but he was sort of sitting at Trump's right hand. And they were looking at all this turmoil amidst the press, kind of posturing for position. And Trump just looks out of the side of his mouth. He looks at Kelly, goes, "It's all one big, beautiful negotiation." And Kelly kind of cracked up a little bit. And that's really sums up Trump. I mean, what you were saying about the minority and the chip on the shoulder and the personal drive, I think his drive is to have a good negotiation. And he just looks at it like it's a negotiation. It's all one big. No, this is the exact quote. "It's all one big, fat, beautiful negotiation." That's why it was memorable. Because it was funny, right? It's just a funny way to say it. But that's him. One big, fat, beautiful negotiation.
Well, that sounds like a one big, fat, beautiful Trumpism to me. Mike, we're going to take a short break. And when we get back, I'm going to ask you about Obama. This is the AJ Steele Show.
You are listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits. No discussion too harsh. No truth more true. The AJ Steele Show. We tell it like it is.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be.
Now, speaking of Obama, I know that there's a lot of people in the middle and the left, they have an idealized picture of him as this super smart, super caring, ultra hip black guy who constantly spends his days worrying about the poor, and he's always the coolest guy in every room. But my personal opinion, my personal view of him is I see a well-spoken, bright con man who is nowhere as intelligent as he gets credit for, and he was raised as a white guy. We all know that. And yet he's full of anger and hatred towards the same whites who promoted him and created his legend. Now, this is the interesting part. I also don't think he cares much about blacks because he has this aura of superiority, and you spoke about that a little earlier. in some ways, I think the only folks he cares about are his globalist bosses and movie stars who gush all over him. Now, without getting into his destructive politics and the division they cause in his nation, what were your observations of him as a human being?
Well, I think Barack Obama was always the smartest guy in the room. And he had a very high opinion of himself. And he wasn't willing to really look at any sort of derogatory, sort of like the Teflon self-image. He's a master politician. He got himself elected president twice. You don't do that without being genius-y politician. And I think he understood the way that American politics work and found the right moment for him. You know, there's that movie, 6 Degrees of Separation. And I think he's the 6 Degrees of Separation president. He's not really what he said he was. And he came in. I wouldn't use the word hatred or anger towards anybody with him. I really wouldn't. I just think he had an aloofness about him that he was above it all. It was all sort of this entertaining game for him. Like you said, it's a con. And that's kind of how it was. It still is. It really still is. I mean, I think he's behind the scenes the guy who's moving things in the White House. And that's the big con that he's running. And it may be, you know, in his mind, maybe it's all one big, fat, beautiful con.
So a follow-up question to what you were saying is, how much of what we see when we see the president, whether it's Biden or Trump or Bush or Obama, is the real person? And how much is just pre-written speeches with lights and makeup? In other words, do you feel that any of them were really in charge? Are they really the boss, or are they just spokespeople for their agenda?
That's a really good question. That's one of the reasons why I was so impressed with Donald Trump's campaign in 2016 and what he's doing today. He walks out in front of a crowd, and that's him. And he says stuff, and sometimes he's profane, just like anybody else would be. And sometimes the profanity he uses is like kind of freaking people out. I mean, you know, the other day he dropped I think it was an F-bomb, and you could see the ladies behind him were like, oh my gosh. You know, and that's it. But that's him. And so he's a guy who is very comfortable with who he is and isn't worried about it. Whereas, yes, I would say George Bush was very cognizant of his image. You know, he was raised in the White House. His dad was the president. He knew what the presidency was. And it was part of his, I guess, his family legacy. I thought he was a good president when I was working with him. The more I see of the sort of the tail end of what happened with Iraq and how that wound up, I see the drawbacks that were there. I mean, I was a supporter of the Iraq war at the time. I'm not anymore. I think it was a horrific move I agree with Trump's assessment. It was a terrible, terrible decision to go into Iraq and lose all those lives and spend all that money on nothing. And Obama was, you know, and now Biden is an egotist like you can never imagine. I mean, you know, it's kind of really disturbing that he's a president, given what I think he's capable of, you know, on the dark side of his personality. And it's pretty dark from what I've seen in the laptop. I think there's a lot of evidence there that he was very darkly involved in his son's very dark behavior. So, you know, Obama let that happen. I mean, that's kind of what Obama was. Obama was like the permissive guy who let Joe Biden rise up through the ranks and become what is now a disastrous president.
So you made a perfect segue to my next question. We talked about all the presidents you worked with, but not about a vice president who, in my opinion, was the token white guy for 8 years. Let's start from the beginning. What was Joe Biden like when you first worked with him?
When I remember going into the White House, so I was there for a year working with Obama, and there was a guy in our office who was working for Biden and struggling because Biden was so long-winded and so egotistical about trying to hog the spotlight whenever he could. So he was always putting himself in front of the spotlight. I mean, when the White House first started, Joe Biden held more meetings in the cabinet room to promote the Recovery Act than Barack Obama, the president, had. You know, he called the cabinet together. So he saw himself as this presidential person, and he was going to be the older, smarter guy that was going to guide this young upstart president into, you know, the great presidency that they would have together. They mixed it up really well together, but I think there was a lot of myth at the end of Joe Biden's vice presidency that, you know, there was this bromance with him and Obama. I think that was done. You know, actually, the reality is Joe Biden's communications people went across West Exec and started working in the White House for Barack Obama. So they're the ones, I think, that were behind that. Shayla Murray was the communications director for Joe Biden. She went across and became a senior communications staffer for Biden. And I think that's where that bromance stuff came from.
I guess he was always the pompous, vacuous jerk we all thought he was. Now, I know I heard you talk a while back about something that happened to Joe Biden with Putin. Many of us know about the time where President Xi of China humiliated Barack Obama when he came to China and he made him get out from the back exit of Air Force One. But I hear that you are in a meeting where Vladimir Putin, the supposed devil himself, really embarrassed Joe Biden.
Humiliated him. And this is 2011. And, you know, and Xi humiliated Biden in 2011, too.
Oh.
Like more than any vice president had ever been humiliated. But the worst example of it was what Putin did to him. So in March, so this is 11 years ago, March 2011, we go into Moscow. I wrote a chapter of it in my book. I wrote the book Joe Biden Authorized in 2020 Crack Up at the Democratic Party. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on my website, joebidenauthorized.com. And the third chapter is called, Do You Mind If I Use Rough Language?
Not at all.
Bitch Slapped in Moscow is the title of the chapter.
Bitch Slapped
in Moscow. And that's what happened. And so I go into pretty good detail. But basically, Biden flew in there. He wanted to be the tough guy. And Putin took him out with a personal humiliation. Basically, he sat him down in this long conference table. Tony Blinken was there. So Tony Blinken, who's now our Secretary of State, was also part of this humiliation. Mm. The Russians have known this for years, that Biden and Blinken would be easy marks if they ever got into power. And look where we are now. So they sit down at this table. They have this meeting. And Putin asks him this question. Tell us about your past, knowing that Biden, this old fogey, there's going to take this story to 18th, you know, 20 minute long. I remember when. And he literally goes, I remember back when I first came here. And they cut the lights out on him. They cut his mic. And the press is watching, is told to leave, like the Russians, out, out, out. And everybody's out, like there. And Biden never said anything. He didn't say, hey, it wasn't done. What's going on? Let's finish. You know, he just like took it, you know, he got slapped and he took it. And that's what happened. And, you know, that's what Putin's doing now in Ukraine. He just knows he can run over Joe Biden and get what he wants.
Unbelievable. And that's why they walk all over us. The Chinese walk all over us. The Ukrainians walk all over us. And the Russians are walking all over us. I forgot the Iranians. Let's mention them as well. Anyway, Mike, I'm going to have to take a short break. And when we get back, I'm going to ask you some questions about Joe Biden's dementia and much more. This is the AJ Steele Show.
AJ Steele, not right, not left. Just right.
Did you notice signs of dementia back then, or is this a more recent kind of thing?
This is very recent. You know, there's that famous video of him being on the stage at the Council of Foreign Relations when he says, you know, I told the guys I was leaving in 6 hours, and if they didn't fire this guy, I was going to take the $1 billion. Well, if you look at him in that interview, that was 2018. That was January 2018. That's the Joe Biden who was vice president. If you look at him now, there's a huge difference. He's half the man he was when he's vice president. He can't go on a plane and fly to China. He can't do that trip. He can't go on a four-stop day campaigning through Ohio and Pennsylvania like he did in 2016 for Hillary Clinton. He can't do that physically anymore. And you know, he can hold together for an hour for a press conference or for an hour for a, you know, a televised debate with Donald Trump, but that's all he can do.
Well, we all know that dementia is progressive and it's not going to get any better. It's just going to get worse. Was Joe Biden ever a bright man or was he just a politician?
He's a very cagey politician and there's a real darkness there. Joe Biden is an evil man, in my opinion. I think he's willing to lie about anything. He's lied about his relationship with his wife since the start. He's put it in writing. He wrote a book called Promises to Keep. He published this book in 2008 to preview his great 2008 presidential run that lasted about 3 weeks and was, you know, dwarfed by Barack Obama's popularity. But in that book, he talks about how he met his wife, you know, and he put it in writing. Well, there's a whole different version of how he met his wife from her ex-husband. In the book, he said he met his wife in 1975 when he was walking through an airport and he saw a poster said, "I want to meet that girl." And he got his brother, Jimmy, to go, you know, tell him who this person was. And he got to meet her. Well, you know, the ex-husband says, "No, in 1972, my wife, Jill, and I were volunteering for Joe Biden's campaign." And that's when he met her. So there's been a lie at the cornerstone of his marriage. That's a very weird thing to do. And I think it had a lot to do with how his son, Hunter, became so deeply self-destructive. I mean, there's no other word for it.
There's no question in my mind that this whole family has some deep pathology to it. He started out by lying about how his original wife died. He said he was a drunk driver when that wasn't the case. And then every time that anything goes wrong in his life, his go-to is, "Oh, my poor son, Bo." And I'm talking about his son who died from cancer. Not to mention all the craziness and all the stories about the pedophilia and his son Hunter going with the wife of his dead brother. And just the fact that he used Hunter for financial and political gain. He never cared about this poor guy's drug addiction. He never wanted to deal with his drug issues or with the fact that he's a sexual deviant. Look, there's some real craziness here. And I think that this pathology comes directly from Joe Biden's selfishness and his worldview. The end justifies the means. He has basically sold his soul to the devil for his political career and to reach the presidency. And interestingly, next week we are interviewing a world-famous psychiatrist, and maybe I'll ask him some questions about the Biden family psychology. But I want to get back to our conversation, and I want to get into the whole Ukraine deal and the corruption, the Biden corruption. Now, we all know that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think that most politicians on both sides are crooked. Everyone has heard of the Clintons and their foundation and their connections with the Russia collusion lie. But now we're finally hearing more and more about the Biden crime family, and you're just starting to touch on that. And in a nutshell, it seems to me that smiling Joe Biden and his son and his brother basically sold out their nation to the highest bidder. They got rich by selling out influence to all of our enemies, including China, Russia, and Ukraine. You personally traveled to Ukraine with Vice President Biden on Air Force Two. What do you remember?
Well, I've been writing about it in a Substack. And a Substack is Midnight in a Laptop of Good and Evil. And the reason I've been writing about it is because about 6 months ago, a guy named Garrett Ziegler, who was a top aide for Donald Trump, came in possession of a laptop, the Hunter Biden laptop. He gave me a copy. So I've been going through the laptop with the knowledge that I have of having traveled to these places. And I don't look at the laptop sordid things. It's so disgusting. I will not allow myself to look at that and have that those images in my memory at all. But what I do have in my memory is I remember going with Joe Biden in 2014 in November to Kyiv. I took three trips there with him. This is the second of three trips. And I write about it because I came across a White House transcript that I produced that was done on Air Force Two on that trip. And in that, there was a Ukrainian woman who was a Voice of America correspondent, Miroslava Gonadze. And she was in the back of the plane, that she was doing an interview with not Joe Biden, but with his spokespeople. And I read this transcript. I got it off the whitehouse.gov website that Barack Obama has archived. And it was, she was asking him questions 8 years ago that are now being asked. Why are there Russian tanks in Ukraine? Why are Ukrainians dying? What are you going to do about it? This was 8 years ago, and no one knew about it. The press that was on the plane weren't reporting it. She was the only one who was asking it. So I wrote a series of substats. Well, as I'm looking into the laptop, I found something just before that trip that connects Joe Biden to the Burisma Holdings people that were paying Hunter Biden then. And there's a lot of aid, United States government aid, that went to Burisma just a few weeks before and after this November 2014 trip. And the one thing that I saw that really tied Joe Biden into it was an email that was sent. So what happened was, at this time, Burisma is a natural gas producer for Ukraine. They're private. They had a lot of drilling going on in eastern Ukraine. This is the area that Putin is now taking over, the Donbas. That's where all the natural gas holdings are. And they were drilling and producing natural gas there. The Ukrainian government was about to tax them at the 70% rate, and they got it knocked down to 50% rate. And natural gas producers are like, hold on, we can't pay this. We can't possibly pay this. The part of the reason why the government was taxing them so high is because the gas producers were corrupt too. They were oligarchs who were corrupt too. So there's there's sort of one corrupt against another corrupt. There's an email from this guy from Burisma. He sends it to Hunter Biden and his group of sort of government lobbyists and lawyers, government sort of focused lawyers and lobbyists. They're lobbying for Burisma. And he says, I really need some help. This is a terrible situation. Joe Biden is, at this point in time that he sends us, he doesn't mention Joe Biden by name. Mm-hmm. This is a week before Joe Biden is supposed to land in Ukraine and talk to them about energy security. We really got to get this sorted out. He doesn't hear back from Hunter Biden or Devin Archer. For 2 days, he doesn't hear back. He hears back from sort of a junior member of the group, but not these two. Finally, he sends another email and he says, Robin, all. This is an existential threat to the producers, the private producers of natural gas in Ukraine. We have to discuss this. Robin Ware is Joe Biden's code name. No one would have known that if they didn't know who Joe Biden was. It was closely protected by the only very close associates of Joe Biden. In the laptop, there's a lot of emails to Hunter from Robin Ware 456@gmail.com. That's Joe Biden. This guy from Burisma is telling Hunter, he's invoking this Robin name to say, Hunter, your dad has to do this. What are you going to do? So that's the email that I saw. That's an indirect connection, but it's one of the most direct indirect connections I've yet seen. There are others, and I'll be finding others out.
Mike, if what you're telling me is true, then this is the smoking gun. This is it. This ties Joe Biden to all this corruption. This is a lot to process, Mike. I'm going to have to take a short break, and we will be right back with the last part of our interview with Mike McCormick. This is AJ Steele.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wise, because he tells it just like it is. You finally see your love
belongs to me. Well, we all know that the oligarchs or the billionaires, whatever you want to call them, in Russia and in Ukraine are crooked, and they all play games, and they in some ways own a lot of our politicians, just like China does. I have a question about the laptop of good and evil, as you call it, or I should say the laptop from hell. That's what everybody else calls it. I don't care about Hunter's sexual liaisons with adult women. That's ugly, but it's not my business. Have you seen any pedophilia in there?
I don't look at the bad stuff. I don't look at it. I don't look at the images. I don't look at the videos. I don't read the texts. I have heard from people who have read it. That's what's in there. There's a really big, the person who gave me this, Garrett Ziegler, his organization, they're an anti-corruption organization, MarcoPoloUSA.org. They're coming out with a report. They will have details of that. I guarantee it.
That's insane. Now, was Obama involved in any of this, or was this completely outside of his realm?
What's interesting, so in my book, Joe Biden Unauthorized in 2020 Crackup of the Democratic Party, I was researching this book. I published it 2 years ago. I was literally looking at it in December 2019. They're impeaching Donald Trump over this phone call to Ukraine. Mm. And I looked at it and I saw, well, you know, there was some reporting about Hunter Biden, and Hunter Biden's business associate had this meeting in the West Wing with Joe Biden. So I got on the WhiteHouse.gov website, you can download the visitor logs. So I downloaded them and looked at them. And I went to the date. The first meeting that day was a name, David Axelrod. And I was like, David Axelrod, what was he doing at 7 o'clock in the morning? He's not a guy who gets up in the morning. I worked with David Axelrod. It showed him visiting the VPR. I know that's the vice president's residence. I was like, wait a minute. David Axelrod doesn't like Joe Biden. He used to think he was the goofy old guy. Why was he at the vice president's residence for breakfast at 7 o'clock in the morning? Come to find out, there was a meeting the evening before with Barack Obama, David Axelrod, Jim Messina, and David Plouffe. And I think they sent Axelrod to the vice president's residence to head off this corruption that he was about to do with Burisma. So in my opinion, yes, Barack Obama knew there was corruption that Joe Biden was conducting, and he tried to head it off, didn't succeed. Like I said, he's the permissive president. He let Joe Biden get away with it. They started covering it up. There's a conspiracy there to cover up Joe Biden's corruption. It extended into the 2016 election. It extended into becoming what we now call Spygate, where they spied on Donald Trump through the election. And I mean, the depravity that is coming out about the Democratic Party and their willingness to win at all costs is going to be, I think, lead them to a 30-year walk of shame. I think they're going to face a red wave election in 2022, and it's going to go downhill for them from there for 30 years.
Well, that's if you believe that we have honest elections. You know, the stuff that you're telling me is earth-shattering, and we don't get to hear about this in the regular media, even though things are changing. And I'll tell you why I think it's happening. I think the Democrats have given up on Joe Biden. He's too demented. He lost any of the goodwill that he had with the public, and he's basically a liability at this point. And that's why we're starting to just hear trickles about this laptop all of a sudden. But I have a question for you. Let's say Biden is impeached, right? We get Kamala Harris or Nancy Pelosi. None of this is good for America, is it?
They don't care about America. That's the first thing to learn about politicians. They care about themselves. So the Democratic Party right now, like you say, is wrestling with what do we do? And their pals in the media are now part of it because they covered up the laptop too. So now they're trying to pretend like, oh, well, it's just Hunter Biden's stuff. We're going to talk about what a bad thing Hunter Biden did, and he's going to pay a price, and he may have to, you know, go to jail for, I'd be surprised if he actually does jail time, but he may be convicted of tax evasion, or he may face a penalty for tax evasion, something like that. I think Joe Biden, based on what I'm seeing, is impeachable. And that's what I'm working for to do in this laptop, on this Substack. I'm working to impeach Joe Biden. And I think he's impeachable. I think if it happens, if there's a red wave election, and there's a House of Representatives that's run by the Republicans, and they take over the Senate, I think what you'll have is you'll have an impeachment of Joe Biden that also becomes kind of what happened to Clinton, where there's one or two senators who won't vote for impeachment. It'll go almost to the top of impeachment, but it won't go over the top, and he'll stay in office. I don't think they want to have Kamala Harris in there. And the other side of it is that Joe Biden knows once there's a red wave election, he's the only guy that can save the Democrats with his veto. So if you get rid of Joe Biden, you get rid of the veto and you bring in all kinds of uncertainty. So his argument for the 2 years he has remaining in his term after the midterms is, I got to stick around. I'm the one that knows what to do. And he'll, you know, he'll play his old man game. He's a crafty old man. You got to give him that.
Mm-hmm. Mike, we have so much more to cover, but unfortunately, our time is running short. I wish I could talk to you for 5 hours straight. Maybe we should do another show in the future.
Yeah, that'd be great.
because I have tons of questions for you. But for now, would you please tell our listeners again where they can buy your books and where they can find out more about you and about what you have to say?
The Substack is what I'm doing currently, and I think that's got the most tie into current events. It's, you can go to Substack. It's The Midnight in the Laptop of Good and Evil is the title of the Substack. You can search for it there. Or if you want to go directly to it, you can go to M. McCormick. My last name is spelled M-C-C-O-R-M-I-C-K. So that's mccormick.substack.com. And that'll take you right to it. The books, my books are Joe Biden Authorized and the 2020 Crackup of the Democratic Party, 15 Years of Plorable, a White House memoir. They're on my website, joebidenauthorized.com. I've got plenty of copies to send out. I don't know if people can buy them hard copy anymore on Amazon. I've had some trouble with Amazon selling my books and then sort of pulling it off the shelf. So I sell them myself off my website. You can buy an ebook on Amazon. It's an ebook.
Got it. I have a final question for you, which I ask of all of our guests. Where do you see our future? Is America done, in your opinion, or do you still feel that we have a sense of hope?
You know, I was out on the Washington Monument grounds on January 6th when Donald Trump gave his speech at the Ellipse. And I didn't go to the Capitol where people got in trouble, but I went there because I felt like it was a really significant historical day. The most important thing I heard out of there and saw with the numbers of people that are there, probably 500,000 people came there. We were standing in a group with people that had traveled on a bus for 14 hours from Madison, Wisconsin. The guy I was standing with had driven all night to come from Indiana. Donald Trump said, "We are a movement." And that's what's happened. That's what's happened out of the Trump presidency so far. I think it's still happening. I think in some ways he's still the president. He calls the shots more than Joe Biden does in some respects. The level of criticism that he weighs against the Democrats, they really don't have a good answer right now. I mean, the economy is, you know, the price of gas alone is changing people's minds about what Donald Trump was as a president versus what they now know was coming from the Democratic Party. So I think people are awake. They're alive. I mean, you and I are talking on this. I'm writing a Substack. We can get the word out, the truth out. We don't have to wait for the media filters. That's the reason why I wrote the books. I stood there in Moscow and watched Putin humiliate Joe Biden. No one ever heard about it until I wrote my book. It was never reported. No one reported it.
Well, Mike, you're doing great service for America and for our republic. And how do they say, from your lips to God's ears? It's been a great pleasure to have you on the AJ Steele Show. I wish you all the best.
Thanks, AJ. I really appreciate you having me.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be. All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl.
The AJ Steele Show. Copyrighted 2022.